Victorinox creates professional kitchen knives for the masterful home chef. Victorinox knives are all made with best-in-class materials and ergonomic, performance-driven designs that are carefully thought out and backed with a lifetime warranty. Valued and inspired by professionals and home chefs alike, the brand's expertly selected range of premium cutlery offers effortless efficiency and ensures you're always best prepared to be a masterful chef. You can find Victorinox knives at Dillard's and everywhere premium kitchen knives are sold. Hey there, listeners, future callers, and cooking enthusiasts. This is Dinner SOS, the show where we help you save dinner or whatever you're cooking. I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious. My guest today is Michelle Norris. You might know Michelle from her work as a journalist at the Washington Post or ABC News, or from her decade-plus stint at NPR, where she co-hosted All Things Considered. You might know her from her Peabody Award-winning Race Card Project or the two books she's authored. Or, more recently, you may know her as the host of the podcast Your Mama's Kitchen.
Welcome to Your Mama's Kitchen, the podcast where we explore how the food and culinary traditions of our youth shape who we become as adults. I'm Michelle Norris. We're going to learn more.
On Your Mama's Kitchen, Michelle and her guests talk about food and childhood food memories as an entryway into conversations about who we are and where we come from. And as the title suggests, Michelle starts each episode by asking her guests to tell listeners about their mama's kitchen.
I think that we are moving so fast that we think about the big things in our life when we reach back to our childhoods, maybe like the holidays or the, you know, the day that you left for college or something like that. But when you talk about the kitchen table, it's kind of mundane. And yet in that simplicity, that's the gristle of who we become.
Michelle joined me in the studio last month to answer some listener questions and to talk some more about her show and the kinds of deep, far-ranging conversations she gets to have. And I have to say, I'm a little envious of her guest list. I mean, we're talking Michelle Obama, John Batiste, Judy Blume. And looking at that list, I had a question for Michelle. Are these high-profile, potentially guarded people ever hesitant to come on the show and really go there?
We haven't had a case where someone didn't want to come on the show because they thought something was too deep. We have had cases where people didn't even know they were going to go to the places that they went. We hear often, I hadn't thought about this in such a long time, or, you know, I don't normally talk about this, but, and I guess that's the intimacy of the kitchen table. We have had a few people who had to be talked into coming into the show. Gail King, for instance, didn't think she had anything to talk about because she doesn't cook. And she's very honest about that. So she didn't think that she would have anything to offer. And then she shows up with beautiful stories and handwritten in her mother's handwriting recipes for a Jell-O concoction that she made every year for the holidays and for mac and cheese recipe.
Yeah.
This show is a chance for people to look back. When we talked to Samin, you know, she talked about a memory.
Oh, that place in Iran. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I had this memory of when I was 14. I went to Iran with my mom. We went and visited one of her best friends, who's since passed away. And she lived in a neighborhood in Tehran. So this neighborhood's kind of like in the foothills of the mountains. And it's a very old and beautiful neighborhood. And the homes there are really old. And there's just trees everywhere. There's all these fruit trees everywhere.
Of course, we're talking about Samin Nosrat, incredible chef and author of the cookbook Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat.
Yeah. And, you know, I dare you to listen to that episode. If you're listening to this episode, you should go to the YMK and listen to that episode. And not start dabbing at your eyes.
Yeah.
You know, when she's going back to this memory and she's Iranian and she's talking about what it was like to grow up as an Iranian America, you know, after the Shah left and the fall of Iran and moving here and being someone whose culture is associated with terrorism.
Yeah.
And with otherness. And because of that, not being able to connect to all the beautiful things about her culture. at the end of that conversation, she was like, girl, you didn't tell me we were going to do all this. I thought we were just going to talk about food. But that's what happens over and over.
And you were literally in her kitchen with her for that conversation, right?
Yeah, we don't always get to do the conversations in person, but that was one that was really special, that we were able to be in her space.
I mean, that, obviously, it's not practical to do that for every guest or even most guests, I'm sure, but that's like part of what the conversations on Dinner SOS are about for me. It's like, even if I can't physically be in somebody's space, I've always just been so fascinated by what is going on in your kitchen at home.
Yeah.
Who are you when, you know, you pick up a knife? Like, who do you become? What influences are you working off of? What makes up culinary you? And often that's like from a real nuts and bolts kind of technical cooking and recipe standpoint. But for you, it's a lot of like those stories that happened in those spaces. I'm really curious, could you give us one of your earliest memories and what sort of looms large in your mind in the kitchen you grew up with?
So I remember dancing in the kitchen because I remember Saturday mornings, there was this show called American Bandstand.
Oh, yeah.
And my sisters were 10 and 12 years older than me, and they were so cool. And they would watch Bandstand, and then they would try out all the new dances. I remember getting my hair done in the kitchen because on Saturday nights, you know, we'd all get our hair washed and then hot comb to straighten our hair and tame it and make it lay down. So it was, you know, fried, dyed, and laid to the side by the time we got to church on Sunday morning. And I remember big pots on the stove, you know, four burner stove. And boiled meals, my mom liked a good boiled meal.
Unpack that for me. What is getting boiled?
You know, there would be greens.
Oh.
You know, leafy greens cooked down for a long stretch of time with probably a big ham hock.
Yeah.
And some onions. There was often a big pot of beans on the stove. And I think that part of that was she was busy and you could put something on the stove and you could let it cook down for a long time. And then you could go take care of life. You know, you could go do other things. Even desserts. There's this dessert that my mom makes, I used to make when we were young, that I was always fascinated by because we had a lot of rhubarb in our backyard. And I grew up in a part of the city that had alleys. And I don't know if there's some beautification project, but people planted in along the alley. So if you went up and down the alley on our street, it was actually kind of nice. People had flowers and sunflowers, and there was a lot of rhubarb back there.
Rhubarb? Of all things.
Yeah, yeah. And as a kid, I remember thinking that rhubarb was supposed to be poisonous.
Yeah, I mean, it is toxic, like the leaves are.
The leaves are, right?
Yeah.
But not the rhubarb.
No.
But see, for a while when I was young, I thought the entire plant was toxic, and I thought she had superpowers or something because she took this toxic thing and turned it into something that was absolutely delicious. She would cut up rhubarb and put probably an entire Folgers can of sugar. I mean, I'm sure it was like a monstrous amount of sugar. And there was usually like a little vinegar or something in it to help break it down. She used just a little bit of, I think it was apple cider vinegar maybe, and it would boil down and boil down and boil down, and then she would add strawberries to it at some point, but you couldn't do that too early because the strawberries wouldn't hold on to their integrity.
Fall apart,
and it would, you know, it would make bars. Sometimes it would just go over ice cream.
Oh.
It would just be slathered on sugar cookies or something like that. But that's a really strong memory I have.
Oh, I love that. So I'm curious, like, who are you in the kitchen? And you've got kids, right?
I've got three adult kids, yep.
What would they say their experience of your kitchen was like?
So I've asked my kids this.
You have,
and
okay.
I said, you're probably going to be asked this question, so think about it and have an answer. And they talked about dancing too.
Really?
We have music in the kitchen all the time. We are a family that likes to dance. So they remember that. They would probably say that Sunday was memorable because I was hosting a show during a big bulk of their childhood where I was on the air from 4 to 6. So what I would often do is cook on Sunday for the entire week. It just made it easier.
What is that like? I mean, I just can't do that. What kinds of things would you make?
Yes, you can. I mean, I would cook a couple things, but a lot of it was, you know this, cooking is preparation. So I would just chop up something. I would do a marinade. I would plan the week. If I was going to make a chicken, I would make two chickens. And then the next day, we might have chicken noodle soup or chicken rice soup, or I might do something with chicken or shred it and do a shawarma or something like that. And so going into the beginning of the week, the refrigerator was a series of containers with instructions.
And who was influencing the kinds of dishes that you were choosing? Like, was it your mom's cooking or was it other sources?
It was a little bit of everything. I mean, my mother is a very good cook, and I married into a family of fantastic cooks. My husband's from Baltimore, or as I say, did I say it right? Baltimore. There's no T when they say it, Baltimore. So I was influenced by our mothers, but we were also adventurous, and we wanted our kids to be, you know, adventurous. So
that's incredible.
We were trying out things that we did not have family connections to. We were making bulgogi. We were trying to figure out how to make afgalemono, you know, Greek soup with chicken and rice. And because I was hosting a show called All Things Considered on National Public Radio, and I often did food segments, I had a chance to talk to some really great cooks. And people were sending me cookbooks all the time. And I love a good cookbook. I mean, I often have stacks of cookbooks next to my bed where I will make dream menus for dinner parties I will probably never host, you know. But so I was always, you know, reading about things and, oh, I want to try that. And so I had all kinds of influences.
Have you ever had a true dinner emergency yourself? Like epic kitchen fail, hosting gone wrong?
Oh, of course.
Tell me about it.
I had one that was early on in my relationship with my husband. As I suggested, his mother was a very good cook. And so I was trying to impress, and I didn't want to be too fancy. So I had made a basic, I guess you'd call it soul food, fried fish. And I grew up Catholic, and my mother was fantastic, could really put a scald on some fish. She could knew how to fry fish and massive quantities
of it. Put a scald on fish? That's the expression you see? I've never heard that before.
You never heard that?
She could put a scald on fish.
Yeah, she could put a scald on some fish. That means you fry it quickly, and so it's got a nice, hard crust on the outside of it, but the inside is delicious and flaky.
Oh, hello.
So I made fried fish, and I was making collard greens. And I, at this point in my life, wasn't cooking with the best pans. I probably was distracted. I, you know, maybe was on, I don't know what I was doing, on the phone or something like that. I burnt the greens.
Oh, liquid gone, just like
just
singed
the bottom,
in the bottom
of
the pot.
Just burnt. So I called mom, and I was like, Mom, I'm cooking for Broderick's mother, and I burnt the greens. Long pause. Do I serve them? Do I start over? You know, they're going to be here. And I think I heard like knock, knock in the middle of that conversation.
Oh.
So, and this is what she told me. She said, peel a potato and put a potato in right now. Scrape the bottom. Don't try to, because I said, do I transfer it to another pot? And she goes, no, because if you transfer it to another pot, it will have no flavor.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
So she said, put a potato in and then move things around and then scrape up as much as you can get. Take that potato out. Do a second potato, put it in there, and do the same thing again. And then she said, fry up some bacon, splash it with a little bit of olive oil. And when you fry up the bacon, do a few more onions that you just wilt in that, and then add a little bit of that. You'll know how much to add. Do you know that potato took out the burnt taste?
Two potatoes. I didn't see the second potato coming, I will admit.
And the first potato, it got nasty. You know, it absorbed a bunch of the ickiness at the bottom of the pan and the burnt flavor. Saved the day.
Wow.
And then, you know, years later, I told my husband's mother, Mary, I told her, you know, the first time I cooked for you, I burnt the green. She goes, I know. So it got most of the burnt flavor out, but she still knew.
See? Even Peabody Award-winning NPR greats are not immune to kitchen disasters. When we get back, Michelle and I tackle some listener questions all about hosting. Victorinox creates professional kitchen knives for the masterful home chef. Founded in 1884, master cutler Carl Elsener opened a cutlery workshop in Ebach, Switzerland, and started making knives for the community. Victorinox knives are all made with best-in-class materials and ergonomic, performance-driven designs that are carefully thought out and backed with a lifetime warranty. Valued and inspired by professionals and home chefs alike, the brand's expertly selected range of premium cutlery offers effortless efficiency and ensures you're always best prepared to be a masterful chef. You can find Victorinox knives at Dillard's and everywhere premium kitchen knives are sold. Welcome back to Dinner SOS. Michelle, should we go ahead and answer some listener questions?
Absolutely.
Great. First question from listener Laura. I love cooking for friends and family, and I'm usually the one who brings homemade desserts and apps to every event. Now that my partner and I have our own house, we're planning a housewarming in July. The catch is that to ensure that everyone has a chance to join the festivities, we're hosting it as a drop-in event starting in the afternoon, running late at night. We're planning to barbecue for those who are around at dinner time, but I'm looking for great food options that can be out much of the day without food safety concerns. I'd also love to have something a bit more impressive than chips, cookies, and veggie and fruit trays, although those will be there too. The full guest list will be around 30 people plus a handful of kids. And, you know, P.S., I've never cooked for more than 10 people. Dietary restrictions aren't too much of a concern. Yeah, finger foods would be great because I'm not sure we own more than 8 dinner plates. How can we put out a delicious spread without constantly worrying about how many hours some of the dishes have been sitting around? I've heard you like to entertain people.
I do.
Have you been in this situation before?
Yeah, our house is like a clubhouse.
Oh, yeah.
People are around, and in the summer, we spend a lot of time in Massachusetts, and the kids are adults now, and they return home with partners, spouses, dogs, and a baby.
Oh, nice.
And a lot of their friends. So we do entertain a lot. And food safety is something you really have to be careful about. So I'm glad that Laura is thinking about that, and she might want to think about food in shifts and have even a timer for herself, like thinking about, okay, if it's in the afternoon and it runs until the evening, maybe think about 3 or maybe even 4 shifts and just, okay, this has been out for 2 hours, I'm going to remove this, mm-hmm. and then have something in the refrigerator that's already laid out that you can just pull out and put out there. And, you know, there might be a jambalaya course, which you can make early, and it actually tastes pretty good cold. You know, a lot of cold rice dishes, cold pasta dishes do well. I would stay away from anything that has dairy in it, right? Maybe the first stage is when you're grilling and they get the hot food, and maybe that's when you do the potato salad. The second stage is more of something that's in the refrigerator that you can pull out and just put down, and maybe that's like cold pasta salads or something like that. Or, you know, fried chicken, actually, if it's done well, if you put a scald on it, you can eat cold. I mean, remember, that's what people used to have for picnics, is that they would put fried chicken in a picnic basket. And maybe the third course is charcuterie, which, you know, are meant to hold up. You just don't want to do a lot of soft cheeses that might get a little funky. But a good charcuterie, and it looks good.
Yeah, like get some nuts, dried fruit, cheese.
You know, little things that people can pick up. And it sounds like she is quite good at making desserts. So maybe people who come for the last shift, they're just eating sweets and a little bit of sweets and cheese and charcuterie.
Yep. I wanted to shout out one recipe. I was like definitely thinking pasta salad, something that doesn't have mayo. Kendra Vaculin, a colleague of mine, has a great broken lasagna pasta salad. Just broken sheets of lasagna noodles and more of like kind of an oil vinegar herby kind of dressing with like some punchy ingredients like olives, et cetera, in there. I was also thinking, I have done like a whole side of salmon for a crowd, you know, which is nice. You can do it ahead. And it's really nice, like even when it's cold or room temp, but you could like lay like a large rimmed baking sheet on top of like even an ice pack, you know, if you had one.
Yeah.
Not like the craziest thing. I don't know, but I like the set like some clearly demarcated sort of like time frames,
time windows. You know, another salad that might work for her is a ramen salad.
Ooh. Like with just like the raw noodles put into the thing?
You break up the salad, and if you do the right kind of dressing, it's big in the South.
It always winds up. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. I actually, when I travel, I like going to thrift stores and looking for like Junior League cookbooks, you know, and the Southern ladies of, you know, Natchez, Mississippi or something like that. And ramen salads are often in there, and people break up the ramen. And if you do the right kind of vinaigrette, it softens the ramen, but you have a little bit of crunch.
Yeah.
And then, so it's a salad that just has a little bit of heartiness to it.
We did one in the pandemic, and at the time it made, you know, about as much sense as anything else that was happening during the pandemic, because it's just not something that I grew up with. But it was like really cool. It was like, yeah, ramen salad, rubber stamp, boom, ship it. Sounds great.
They're actually good. I made a ramen salad. The first time I did it, I had actually had it in Mississippi, and I came home and made it, and I have a dear friend who I'm going to tell to listen to this episode in particular, because I'm going to shout her out. Her name is Marcia Ferguson, and she's like, girl, you are not putting ramen in the salad. I'm like, I am.
It's happening.
It's happening. And you know, at the end of the night, when there was a little bit of ramen salad left in the big metal bowl, I caught her in the kitchen eating the dregs of what was left of the ramen salad. So that was quite an endorsement, I would
say. Nice. She came around. All right, I'm going to keep us moving here. This is a question from listener Emily. I love hosting dinners in my NYC one-bedroom apartment, but I hate being busy cooking and then cleaning and being away from my guests for a large portion of the evening while I'm hosting. What would you put on the menu that would ensure I can mostly prep ahead, but make it be very impressive to present to my guests and still be with them instead of sweating over the stove for half the evening?
One pan meals.
Yeah, that's kind of like where I was at. I pulled a few. I have like a cast iron roast chicken with crispy potatoes. This is all about like you do the prep ahead, right? It's like a seasoned bird sitting, you know, gets dropped into a cast iron skillet with lots of really thinly sliced potatoes just kind of fanned all around it. So it's just kind of filling a large cast iron. The potatoes absorb that like schmalty fat that kind of comes off the chicken. The chicken gets burnished and golden. The whole thing kind of comes out, you know, like an hour-ish later. And it's just, that is all downtime. That is time you can be hanging out. Another good example that came to mind was like a slow roast gochujang chicken from Molly Baz, which is just, that's like the low and slow approach, just chicken, aromatics, gochujang kind of rub, but hands off. Again, it's like, it's one pan. And it's just a question of setting it up and just getting it in the oven.
Would you add a pork roast to that?
Oh, sure.
And then just letting people, you know, maybe having like big Boston bib lettuce and lots of different things that they could throw in with a pork roast that you kind of pull apart.
Love that.
Or, you know, the momofuku recipe also, if you just marinated it the night before and then let it cook low and slow for like 5 hours for the pork shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Boston butt.
That is like heroic meat. That is like the meat that I get a little like weak at the knees for.
And if you take the time, it actually, as long as you keep it moist, it's really hard to ruin that recipe, you know, if you have a good cut of meat and you have good time.
But if you do, call into the show.
Yeah. The other thing that I would say to her is maybe soup.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
You know, that you cook ahead a hearty soup that then you can either serve in a tureen or that you can present and garnish it beautifully. And maybe it's a fish stew or a gumbo, you know, which you do ahead of time and you do a nice first course and a nice salad and then everyone is kind of eating, you know, all at once. And that's all something that you did ahead of time. So it's done on the stove and you just have to serve it when people show up.
Yeah, anything that you can just do, even in its entirety the day before, just chill and then just throw back on the stove. Just such a win.
You know, we have a recipe from your mama's kitchen. There are two that I think of that would actually work well for her. One is Andy Garcia's pollo fricassee. And that, I road test all the recipes. That's the one that my family just really dug. And I was surprised because it had things in it that I thought, raisins. Okay. I wasn't expecting that.
Raisins.
And potatoes and green peas. But you can do the whole thing ahead of time. You could do it a day ahead. And then, you know, I always joke that if we do the cookbook around it. Actually, we do eventually a cookbook around the show that it would be called Better the Next Day because everyone says that everything their mom cooked seemed to be better the next day. And so that's one that you could do and it would be almost even better the next day. And the other one was something that Abby Wambach's mother makes and it's called Pasta for Thousands, which is kind of a riff off lasagna or ziti.
Yes.
It had ground beef and sausage. And then it was layered. And it was layered with noodles and then slices of provolone and sour cream. It had a lot of tomato sauce and then layered with provolone and then more sauce and more meat and then layered with mozzarella.
With sour cream? Like as a standard?
That was,
almost,
yes.
Almost
that
for
was the
bechamel?
Thing. I was like, sour cream?
Sour cream?
But if you were living in an area where sourcing ricotta was hard.
Yo, sure.
You know, the combination of provolone and sour cream actually kind of wound up tasting a little bit, you know, like the ricotta and the bechamel. And
yeah, it, I could see it. Bright.
It was some
bright,
approximation
but a little unctuous and
of that, yeah. That had a great response from the family. So that's a, you know, example of something she could make ahead of time, too.
Yeah. Love that. Thank you. We're going to take another break. When we get back, more listener questions. And we are back. All right, the next question is from listener Mallory. I find that when I'm visiting or hosting my parents and other family for the holidays, we have good plans for the big meals, such as Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas Eve dinner, Christmas breakfast, etc., but find ourselves foraging in the fridge for the, you know, kind of whatever meals. I need some easy make-ahead ideas, ideally substantial snacks that could be dinner, so that when everyone's like, wait, what's the plan? I'm hungry. I can magically pull something out of the fridge. I can only eat so much cheese and crackers. I feel like this one, like, you must have some ideas in your back pocket, given that you seem to entertain a lot.
Yeah. Homemade pizza.
Ooh.
Is an easy one.
You make your own dough, the whole thing?
I don't make my own dough. Because there are some of these things that are so easy. You can get pretty good dough at Trader Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
And let people, because it's, it, you know, what do you want? Do you want pepperoni on yours? Do you want sausage? So it's a little bit of dealer's choice.
Love that.
Cold chicken, you know, or chicken that you can heat up pretty easily. The chicken dish that I think of for the holidays that I usually have around, there's a product called Soy Vey.
Oh.
They tell the story. He's Jewish. She's Asian. It's a riff off the Yiddish phrase, Oy Vey.
Of course.
And said it's Soy Vey, and it is a teriyaki marinade. It is magic. If you just want to cook something quick and
I've
easy.
I've seen this.
That
oh,
will
yeah,
knock people's
seeds.
Socks off.
Oh, yeah.
You just get some. I always do it with chicken thighs, and you can do it with skin on or skin off. You can do it boneless, skinless. Pour a jar. It's just so easy. Glass pan, chicken thighs. Pour a bottle of Soy Vey in there. This is important, though. You also want a bag of baby carrots.
Mm.
And you put that all in between the chicken, season your chicken, pour the Soy Vey in. I guess the soy will wind up, a lot of it absorbing into the carrots. So the chicken winds up being really tender. The carrots have this sweetness to them. And then at the end, sprinkle it with a little bit of toasted sesame seeds. You don't even have to be toasted, just sesame seeds. Take a scallion and cut up the green pieces and sprinkle that on the top so it looks pretty. The whole thing took 50 minutes.
Mm.
Like 8 minutes of prep, just throw it in the oven, take it out, and maybe serve it with some rice or not. You know, I mean, it's just pretty good on its own. That's a pretty quick one for,
I
you know,
love
the day
that.
Before Thanksgiving or the day after Thanksgiving.
Okay, this is like adjacent to that. And so a question from listener Joe. In my family, we celebrate via not dinner, but brunch. Graduations, brunch. Anniversaries, brunch. You get the idea. Here's my problem. After 11 squillion brunches, I'm out of ideas. All the recipes in my rotation have rotated multiple times, and I want to preempt people rolling their eyes and thinking, not this again. I'm a pretty confident home cook, and I don't mind project recipes. I'm in Miami, so a lot of stuff is available year-round, and that includes some pretty wild tropical stuff. The brunch rules in our family are A, something carby and sweet, B, something meaty, C, something eggy, D, something fresh fruitish, E, optional, something in a fresh bread vein, like rolls or biscuits. I don't need to have all new versions of these elements, but at least a couple to freshen things up. Help, pretty please.
Hmm. I was going to say dim sum. Like,
Yes.
But then he said something eggy, and I don't know how you introduce something eggy with dim sum.
Well, and not everything I think has to hit all of these attributes. And if you were willing to do like dumpling brunch, because you can get people involved in forming them. Everybody can learn at least like a couple of like pleats, you know, in a few minutes. That's a fun way to go about it. There's this place near me in Philly that just opened, and it's called Pafuto. And one of their specialties is they make panzerotti, which is like a fried calzone. Mm. But they do, some of them have like breakfasty fillings in them. So you'll get like scrambled egg inside a calzone that is fried, and they'll do other additions too. Mm. And I don't know. I mean, for this guy, I'm like,
put a scald on that.
Yeah, put a hell of a scald on that. And so I'm suddenly thinking, oh, maybe it's like a brunch calzone. You know, like throw some scrambled egg in there. You know, with some breakfast sausage and some cheese and some cooked out greens. There was one recipe that came to mind because of, it's clearly the sort of sense of adventurousness that Joe is kind of bringing here. It was the egg burgee strata. This is from Hotel Vasavada. You know, basically imagine like a strata, like a baked kind of savory, you know, bread pudding of sorts, but with just tons of spices, cumin, garam masala, coriander, you know, more cumin, turmeric, chili powder, cilantro, but still with like the cheese, you know, in there, sharp cheddar. That one, I've been looking for an excuse to sort of talk about that recipe for a while. And
I want that recipe.
My opportunity.
Really, yeah, I dig that. That sounds like a winner. When you were talking about the calzone, I was also thinking, could you do arugula? When I was on the radio, I used to cook regularly with Dori Greenspan.
Yeah.
And one year for the holidays, she taught me how to make arugula. We did it on the radio. And then I had all this dough left over. And I would sometimes, and she's like, you're going to do what? But I would put ham and eggs and just things like that in it, cook it. And then it's something they could eat in the car, basically. We were on the way to church on Sunday.
As in arugula, like the Jewish
the little rolled up
cookie?
Jewish, yes, yes. And I was talking to her about putting ham and cheese, which I know was something I probably shouldn't have done, but to, you know, turn it into like a savory breakfast.
Yeah,
treat.
Like the ham and cheese croissant of the arugula
really
world.
Well.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, you know, I've been in this position before where it's like your culinary imagination kind of runs wild, even if it's kind of antithetical to certain, you know, strains of Jewish culinary practices. It's like, just from a pure culinary standpoint, it sounds like, you know, I would certainly put a scald on that. Also, I'm not somebody who's like, ooh, I'm going to go home and like make a fruit salad. But when I have enough ripe fruit and can be bothered to prep it all, wow, do I love a fruit salad, especially when it's like mango, grapefruit supremes, or just cut off the core after peeling the whole thing, you know, blood oranges, doing like lime, vanilla, lots of salt, a little bit of olive oil, getting crazy with it.
A little bit of mint.
Mint, yes, exactly.
I like where you're going with this because I think fruit salads are often an afterthought. And when you have a fruit salad that's done really well, it's delicious.
Yeah.
And it can be something as simple as, you know, something magical happens to mango when you just squeeze a lime on top of it.
Yeah, some lime salt, or like if you have tahine, use it, you know, on top of some like really juicy fruit, whatever. And it sounds like Joe probably have access to like lots of stuff.
Well, you know, watermelon. Oh. Spiced watermelon, tahine and watermelon is
something
just
so
fantastic.
Special about that.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Spice House in Chicago. They have something called Back of the Yards, which is my workhorse seasoning. It's called Back of the Yards because the folks that worked in the stockyards would often bring home funky cuts of meat. And in order to mask the flavor, they would have to season the hell out of that meat. So it's basically garlic pepper, but it has a lot of other spices in it. Mm. You hit some watermelon with a little bit of that Back of the Yards. If you're listening to this and you do this, you should come back and talk to Chris and I because it really is a fantastic, and that is a go-to salad for me, particularly in the summer. If I just need something else on the table, just cut up some watermelon, sprinkle some of that on it, and there you go.
Yeah, I don't think like a brunch spread would be complete without some sort of fresh fruit. But to your point, it can be as simple as like cut up one ripe thing. And if it's watermelon, so much the better. Like it can take so much in terms of salt and heat and still come through this like bracing, refreshing experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's capable of quite a bit. Any final thoughts?
For Joe, I like his address.
I know, Joe sounds really fun.
For someone who, you know, celebrates brunch in that way, I love a good brunch. Brunch is a verb.
Oh, well, Michelle, this was really, truly a pleasure. And I'm really honestly, like, to be quite frank, in awe of your ability to coax these stories out of people. And it's really quite inspiring in terms of what people will share with you. So anyway, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show, and so fun to chat with you.
Great to talk to you. I hope we get a chance to cook one day together.
That would be
great. I'd love to learn from you.
Let's do that. I'm sure I could learn plenty from you.
Let's put a scald on some.
Definitely. Just not the collard greens.
Exactly.
If you have a dinner emergency on your hands, write to us at dinnersos@bonappetit.com or leave us a voice message at 212-286-SOS1. That's 212-286-7071. You can find the Bon Appetit recipes mentioned on today's episode on the Epicurious app brought to you by Condé Nast. Just search Epicurious in the App Store and download today. And you can find the recipe shared by Michelle's guests at yourmamaskitchen.com/recipes. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating and review on your podcast app of choice. And hit that follow button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening to Dinner SOS. I'm your host, Chris Morocco. My co-host this week is Michelle Norris. Our producer is Michelle O'Brien. Peyton Hayes is our associate producer. Cameron Foos is our assistant producer. Jake Loomis is our studio engineer. Amar Lal mixed this episode. Chris Bannon is Condé Nast's head of global audio. Next week, what goes better with eating than drinking? Join me and some colleagues from the Test Kitchen and beyond to chat all things beverages.
And you have to do it in the right kind of pan with the right kind of oil, and you have to get the oil really hot, right? So you can cook a lot of fish fast so it doesn't get that kind of schmodies in the grease that
for sure.
I'm making up words there,
the
but you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, we all know. Victorinox creates professional kitchen knives for the masterful home chef. Victorinox knives are all made with best-in-class materials and ergonomic, performance-driven designs that are carefully thought out and backed with a lifetime warranty. Valued and inspired by professionals and home chefs alike, the brand's expertly selected range of premium cutlery offers effortless efficiency and ensures you're always best prepared to be a masterful chef. You can find Victorinox knives at Dillard's and everywhere premium kitchen knives are sold.